Blog Talk Radio.
Time now for Lydia's Literary Lowdown on Greater Good Ministries Radio. Join Lydia at 4 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Eastern every Saturday and get the lowdown on today's popular authors, publishers, and pundits. Lydia's Literary Lowdown, right here on GGM Radio, every Saturday, 4 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Eastern.
Welcome to Lydia's Literary Lowdown. If you have not heard about DeadlyEverAfter.com or the divine Kristen Strassel or Julie Hutchings, you need to go there. No, don't go there. Run there. Because their blog posts are absolutely sublime, but there are even better things cooking up with Kristen and Julie. I've got Kristen with me right now. She has a marvelous book, two of them, and I've been fortunate enough to read them. I'm going to be gushing quite presently. Kristen, how are you today?
Good. How are you, Lydia? Thanks for having me on.
Well, I just finished Night Moves, the second book. I finished that last night. I read it in 4 hours flat. It was absolutely amazing. But I don't think I can do it justice. You've got Because the Night, out with editors now, and then you also have Night Moves. How would you describe this kind of to the audience so they know how these things are interconnected? I will muck it up.
Okay, well, both of them, instead of going literally and having one be the sequel to the other, they run together. So you can read one or you can read the other one. It's more of building a universe in the way that maybe Sherilyn Kenyon or Terry Pratchett did. So they have the same mythology. They have the same core. They have all of the same things. There basically is a vampire named Callister Rancourt. She is taking over entertainment in Las Vegas. And she's taking over entertainment in general. So in Vegas, you meet Immortal Dilemma, and that's in Because the Night. And they are in residence in her hotel. And in Night Moves, you meet Soul Divider. And they're a band that's a little bit down on their luck. Their heyday kind of came and went. And they turn to Talis just try to get that back because she did such good things with Immortal Dilemma. So you have the same same mythology, and you can read one will not spoil the other, and I took great pains to do that. And the bands are vampires, so we have rockstar vampires because my favorite mythological creatures are vampires and rock stars, and I think that both have a lot of things similar. That they never seem to grow old. They don't play by the regular rules. They both have that same kind of lustful image that you're just drawn into. And then the other unique thing is that the women protagonists are all muses, because any good rock star worth his salt has a muse. So Callie in Because the Night is Tristan's muse, and Melanie is Rider's Muse in Night Moves. And I even picked the names very carefully because Callie is Calliope, the most famous of the muses, and she's the muse of epic song. And Melanie comes from another word that I can never pronounce, it's Greek, but she's the muse of tragedy, as you'll find out as you read Night Moves, that she has a lot of tragedy that she has to deal with and kind of run from.
But, okay, because the thing is, these are epic books, okay? So I have to say, what you're going to see in both of these books, what I saw is this is told through Callie, who for some reason I was inexplicably calling Carly before we went on air, okay? I've told you about my problem with names, but the characters are amazing because Because of the Night, it's Callie we see everything through. It's Melanie in Night Moves that we see everything through, and the openings are absolutely marvelous. I mean, these are not circumstances. I did it with Julie as well, I always get worried whenever Vampire is thrown out there, because I don't want people to think Twilight with either of these books. Because the Night is a female, it's a human point of view. She is so relatable. I mean, Callie is so relatable. You've taken great care to really craft her as a full-fledged character. Was that easy to do? Was it easy to step into Callie's shoes, or did it take time for you to develop that character?
Well, I had a lot of time to develop Callie because that book is really my baby. And a lot of people asked me how I came up with the concept of it. And there were really two things that happened. And one of them was I used to have a hard time sleeping because at the time I had a job that was very stressful and all I would do was think about what I had to do that day. So I tell myself stories to go to sleep. And Callie Interesting came out of that. And then secondly, this is kind of funny that I basically went out on the 4th of July in a hotel, didn't have to worry about driving, so enjoying myself, and had this crazy dream about this girl trying to make her way in Las Vegas. And the more that I found out about the dream, I think my friend left on Showgirls because it was basically Showgirls. But anyway, I felt so strongly about it, I actually moved to Las Vegas to pursue writing the book. And this was about 10 years ago, and the book didn't get written then, but at the time and when I was there, really contributed to what the backdrop for, Night Moves was in Las Vegas, and because the night, it is a really important backdrop, and I feel that if there's anywhere that vampires could really flourish, and especially of that kind of decadence, and Sin City, and the 24 hour, and the anything goes, and the danger, it's Las Vegas. I had some time to really work with those characters, and we came, you know, I had to mold her and shape her to get her to where she needed to, and where everybody, not that everybody liked her, but to make her really a full-fledged character. But I had some time with her. With Melanie, that was on the fly. But Callie, as I said, is really my baby. And I had a lot of time to really put her together, and I really had strong feelings about what she believed in, what she wanted, and what she was going to do.
Right, and she's kind of a strong protector to me in that, you know, when the novel opens, she's just looking for her friend. That's all she wants. She's looking for a friend, someone that she kind of hoped that there might be more with down the line. But she's not hopelessly in love with Tristan, who she's looking for. She's not hopelessly in love with him. She's not pining after something she can never have. She's actually just concerned. She's concerned that he's okay, that he's went off the rails. And the reason for this, of course, is because he had substance abuse issues. He had them when they were together, and Tristan still has some issues whenever she finally meets him. But the way that you set it up is brilliant as well, in that no one knows. I mean, Callie's very innocent. I mean, she can kick butt. Don't get me wrong, because I don't want to misrepresent this marvelous character you've created. She can kick butt. I mean, she has steel running through her, but she is very caring. She's not a mother. She's too young for that, but she's almost maternal in a way. She wants Tristan on the right path. Anything she can do, even if it doesn't benefit her directly, that's exactly what she's going to do to try and help him out. Well, it's not that simple because Tristan happens to be dead, kind of, right?
Well, you know, she has, she has very strong convictions about the fact that she's helpful, but she's naive. She comes from a very protective background. There actually is a prequel novella that, unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to send over to you, but it will be coming out as well shortly, where you meet Callie and Tristan that summer that they met. And he was her first love, and she was not his by any stretch of the imagination. So she went into it a little guarded, but when he fell off the rails, and she knew something was very wrong, and then he comes out, he doesn't want to talk about this vampire band he's in. So she knew something was wrong. So her first chance, she went out there, and she wanted to make sure things were okay. And because she's had kind of she's 18, so her role of the world or her view of the world is very limited anyway, as you know, not being 18 anymore. So she's doing the best job that she can and kind of has kind of a naive confidence to her. So she's not going to take anybody's crap but she doesn't always make the decisions that make her life the easiest.
Yeah, but she doesn't make stupid decisions that make you want to beat her with pointy sticks until she bleeds either. I've read plenty of characters like that. She's not like that at all. The stupid decisions she makes, if there are any, because, you know, really, I'm a little torn on that, okay? What the reason, the focal point that you keep going in that book is the reason, and because the night that Callie makes the decision she does is because she's trying to help. That's it. That's,
she's always trying to help. She's always
like
trying
a really
to make things
strong
better.
Thread through the whole book.
Right. Like, that is what she's always trying to do. And, you know, sometimes you're not, you just don't, and it's funny, all my good mothering advice is actually wasted on my bird, because today he was complaining, and I said, those are your choices. They might not be good ones, but that's all you've got. And that rings true for Callie, too. Like, sometimes they're not the greatest choices, but she's got to do what she needs to do and do what she thinks is best. But, of course, she's not a machine. She's a human being, and she has a heart and a conscious and, you know, desires, and sometimes she gets a little bit off track, but who doesn't?
I don't know.
None of us are perfect.
Because I think you really kept her on track. I mean, if she wants to help Tristan, there's no doubt about it, but Tristan almost seems like he doesn't want any help himself. And so what does she do? I mean, I think she makes the absolute best decision because she goes and becomes interested during the course in this in a human named Blade. This is not some freaky Twilight kind of angle. There is not, this is not Twilight, people. It's much more, I would say Twilight is like a cheap chocolate bar, and I love Twilight, don't get me wrong. And everyone knows I love chocolate, okay? I just want to make that really clear. I devour Twilight. However, if I'm going to look at Twilight, and I'm going to look at Because of the Night and Night Moves, I'm going to say Twilight is like a cheap candy bar you cannot resist in the grocery store. Whereas you're talking Godiva, you're talking Switzerland handmade chocolates when it comes to Because of the Night and Night Moves. And the reason for that is because this is complex. It's very complex. It's not as simple as a kind of a threesome going on. It has nothing to do with that. She stays true to herself. And that was huge to me.
She stays true to herself. She never does. She's never not in control. Some people have questioned the fact that, you know, she does have the two relationships, not at the same time, really, with Blade and Tristan, but they're not at the same time, and they're both people that she's in love with, and it's okay that she's in love, you know, with different people. She's 18, and I mean, even at 58, but she's always in control. She's never tricked into anything, and that's what both of the male characters really like about her, too, is that they kind of know who's running the show.
The fact of the matter is, it's not to me. There should be no question why she has relationships with either of these men. There should be no problem, because I'm telling you right now, based on your descriptions, and I could just cast my imagination anywhere. If I had two incredibly hot guys, okay, at different times, all right, not like in the same day, but at different times when I wasn't involved in a relationship with the other, right? If I had an incredibly hot guy in a room alone and he wanted to have his way with me, okay.
Exactly.
It's just,
exactly.
I don't
and
get the
like,
kind of puritanism that people have going on there, because I look at Callie as a character who made the same decisions I would have made and that any other woman would have made given the situation she's in.
Yes.
And, of course,
she
also has surprises in there as well.
She always, and she's always true to herself. She's always true to her heart, and she always means the best. Whether or not anybody else around her does. So that's where the adventure goes with that. And she always does mean the best. But and especially after living in Las Vegas and knowing some of the characters that kind of run in the underbelly there and not saying anything, you know, crazy about mob people, but just normal people. They're transient. They're there from somewhere else. They're probably running from something. They have one thing in mind, and it's themselves. And, you know, when I moved out there, I was not 18, and it was still a little bit overwhelming. I was an adult. And, you know, Callie, this isn't something she's used to. You know, this is her first time out on her own. So these are the type of people who are, even if they mean well for her, they're going to kind of take her for a little bit of a wild and crazy ride. And not that Tristan or Blade do that, but the other people surrounding don't always want the best for her. And
right.
That's really what...
You know, that brings me to an amazing plot, because the thing that struck me about both books is that you just cannot expect anything. Don't expect anything. You have a way of really drawing in the reader to the point that they just keep going. I mean, I read through both books straight. I didn't stop because they were that good and I had to know what happened next. But when it comes to the plot, you make it look so effortless that my envy, first of all, knows no bounds, but it also needs some sort of reassurance. Do you really, are you a panster, or do you plot extensively?
Because the night was plotted, very much so. Night Moves was pantsed, so much to the point where I haven't even read the full manuscript yet. Myself.
Are you joking? Oh,
no.
Are you going to tell me the manuscript I read last night, okay, you have not read the entire thing? You just banged that out.
No, I have not.
I
haven't read it yet. I finished it the Monday before I went to Europe and sent it out to a couple beta readers. You're the first person who's actually had it back to me. Yay! And, no, I was actually taking a little bit of time away from it so I could look at it with fresh eyes before I started editing.
Okay, so I promised myself I wouldn't be overly aggressive or bitter or jealous or envious, and that's all flown out the window because I know what my first drafts look like. They may be readable, but you're going to cringe at certain parts, okay? In particular, my love of semicolons, okay? I'm looking for a 12-step or a cure. I haven't found one yet. But this is... you know, before we went on air, I told you I found like a couple spelling mistakes. Everything else is solid. I would be proud to sit down and read that as a first draft if I were you. It really shows all the work you've done. Be it on deadlyeverafter.com. Everybody definitely check that out because you give us treats. Okay, not only did you bang these manuscripts out, but you give us treats all the time on deadlyeverafter.com. What kind of schedule do you keep?
Well, Julie and I really take writing seriously. You know, you've heard the saying that you should dress for the job you want, not the job you have. So we decided we were going to have the job we wanted, not the job we had. So we took everything extremely seriously. We have a pretty rigorous schedule for the blog that we post 5 days a week. And actually afterwards, she's sitting here live tweeting. I haven't looked at Twitter, so I don't know if anybody else is listening, but Julie is, Julie's on it, on the tweet box. Hi, she says. And both of us write every day. And Julie has a word limit that she wants to do 1,000 words a day. She calls it a 1,000 word a day diet. And I kind of go until I run out, if that makes sense. Like, I'll have an idea for a scene, and I'll write until basically the curtain fades to black. And sometimes it's a little bit hard for me with my work schedule. I'm a freelance makeup artist, and sometimes my days are extremely long, and there's a lot of driving. They start really early. And sometimes I sit in the car when I'm early for work and write in a notebook. But both of us take it extremely seriously, and we don't pull any punches with ourselves. Like, we're not putting out things that aren't acceptable, and we will tell each other if there's crap involved.
Do you go over and edit before you actually post? Because it even seems effortless and seamless there on the blog. It's a joy to read.
Well, thank you. You know, I don't, as far as that goes, no, not really. We just kind of post whatever's on our mind. I can't speak for Julie as far as how many you know, passes through. I make sure there aren't any mistakes. Of course, something always, you know, sneaks through. But that's about it. It's just kind of more of a what's on our mind, stream of consciousness, unless we're doing something to the point of, you know, we're reviewing a book or we're really trying to put a point across. But if it's just our opinion and it flows. And you see that we are serious, we are silly, we are a little ridiculous. We're not afraid to put it out there. We'll try a lot of things to see what
and
works.
Marvelous. Because, I mean, one of the best things for me was I had a preview. There is a preview on DeadlyEverAfter.com. You can read, I don't know if you put the whole first chapter up or not, but you can start Night Moves on there.
Yes, that one is Meet Melanie, and it is Introducing Night Moves, Meet Melanie, I believe is what it's called. And that is the first chapter. The first chapter is very short. It gets right to the point, as you know. And that's up there. I haven't put any of the rest of it up there yet because, again, I haven't sat down and read through the whole thing yet.
Oh, man. You could do it. You could do it because, you know, the setup is, I'll tell you the setup, but I'm going to tell you right now, you need to read it for yourself at DeadlyEverAfter.com. And before I forget to mention, you need to follow Kristen Strassel. That's it, at Kristen Strassel. You need to follow her because she and I have to recommend Hutchings Julie as well because they're freaking hilarious. It's not just
well,
the blog.
Yeah.
It's also on Twitter where you guys are just so much fun. That's how I discovered both of you through Twitter because you both have really strong voices there. I mean, you're absolutely hilarious. But that said, if you run, and you should be running, to DeadlyEverAfter.com and read that first chapter, basically, Melanie, there's a snowstorm and the power goes out. She has to go home. She gets home hoping that she and her boyfriend, Jamie, can have a little private time because she's been so immersed in her job. He's kind of complained about it. Well, what does she run into?
Oh, kind of complained about it.
A compromising position. Let's put it that way. Melanie runs into a compromising situation involving her boyfriend and another woman. You can probably guess what that is. And she takes really definitive action. I'm not going to tell you about because reading it is way better. And it whets your appetite. I mean, I read that and I reached out and I said, can I please interview you? Because that's amazing. Writing of that quality on any blog catches the eye. It's absolutely amazing. And of course I'm dying having read Because of the Night, having read Night Moves, what are you planning next?
Well, the next move, there's the Night Songs collection. So I'm going to introduce some new characters. And another muse and another, he's not necessarily a rock star, but he's kind of a dark, sinister leader. It's going to be set in Las Vegas, and we're going to have a circus instead. So we're going to have some magic, and I've kind of come up with some of the characters in my mind. But, they're involved in Talus. They're involved in the mythology, so they will run concurrently with the other two books. And at that point, I think that's it, because I don't want to get too many characters and too much going so people can't follow it. And I also don't want to create a world that I can't keep up with. You know, I need to keep it manageable for myself. When I was flying to England, where I just, as I said, just came back from, I was trying to put myself to sleep, so usually I had to create new characters to actually put me to sleep now, but Callie and Tristan came into mind, and I pulled out my notebook, and I wound up writing about 10 pages of the sequel to Because of the Night, and that one, I can tell you, is tentatively called We Own the Night, and if you've read it, and of course, we can't really spoil, because there would be a lot of spoilers if we told you, but you can kind of see where that might be going, and that might prick up your eyebrow a little bit. So I don't think I'm going to do them at the same time because that's not how I operate. But the one with the circus needs a little bit more research because I don't know anything about circuses. So we'll see what happens. That's kind of what I'm thinking right now. Those are the two that I have stirring in the pot. I have a couple of novellas that I think need to be written about some backstory about Talus because...
Oh, thank God. I was going to ask for that.
Yes, because she makes appearances. She's kind of like the wizard. in a way. She makes appearances, but she's a mysterious character.
And I want to know more about her. I would love kind of what Anne Rice did, although she didn't execute particularly well with all of them, but I would love what Anne Rice did whenever she took on Armand or any of those kind of iconic characters, and she focused a book particularly on their backstory. I would love that on Talis. She is that interesting.
Well, that's kind of what I had in mind for her, because it never really comes out, you know, because she's very focused on the present, because she's a good little businesswoman, and she needs to be looking forward, not backwards. But you need to know about her and how she came into this this role. Because most of the vampires that you talk to, or you meet, Tristan and Immortal Dilemma and Ryder and Drake and Soul Divider, you really meet everybody in Soul Divider. They're all new within the last couple of years. So they don't have the mythology, and they don't have the tradition. And depending on who you talk to, they don't really care. And, you know, which is also something that would happen with modern young adults. They don't really care about what's happened before, because it doesn't really apply to them.
Right.
But Talis is, you know, very old. I believe I have her in maybe around 1750. And she comes from an interesting background, and she comes into that for a reason. She was always a businesswoman, and she was involved in different things, you know, obviously throughout the years, but this is what she really felt. Basically, based on the economy on the crash of 2008 is where she came into this business model. Because as we know, Vegas really took a hit besides the construction that petered out. There was nobody going on vacation. So if nobody's working and nobody's coming, nobody's working and nobody's coming. So she needed to figure out a way to start making money again, because a lot of the casinos at that point started losing money and closing. And this is what she came up with. But her past is much more interesting than just casinos.
Oh, she's amazing. I mean, honestly, you would think it would be off-putting, right? I mean, I don't know what every reader thinks, obviously, but I can say this. You know, I really had a hoot with her in the last scenes, which I'm not spoiling anything, because this could be taken into context anywhere. It's not going to tell you specifically what she's talking about, but she's like, you know, humans have a problem. They think they're smarter than me. Okay, they think they're smarter than us. And I keep telling them, like, she's like, I keep telling them they're not smarter than us, and they keep doing stupid things to prove my point, right? So
right.
I think, particularly in Night Moves, you get the way that you have bound this all together is absolutely, it's brilliant, because you get two totally different views from two totally different sets of eyes, because Melanie is totally different from Callie. She really is. And you get a totally different view. You get totally different events. These are not events that have been done before. I mean, anyone who listens to this show knows I hate predictability. I hate when I start a book and I already know what's going to happen because it's been done before. Well, you just don't get that in either book. You don't know where it's going. You only know that you have to find out. And, of course, in the end of Night Moves, I did not scream out loud, because my children probably would not have cared for that, but I definitely gasped, because the only thought pounding through my fevered brain, or what passes for it, was, I want the next book, and I want it now. It is as satisfying of a cliffhanger as any I've seen recently. I mean, absolutely brilliantly done. Because I
Thank
know
you.
Something big is coming up next. I want to know what it is. I don't want to be told what it is. I want to discover what it is. Because, I mean, it is beyond my capability to understand how on earth you kind of pantsed Night Moves whenever you brilliantly executed tying these worlds together, and yet they're very separate. When you read them, I get a little thrill when you refer to Immortal Dilemma in Because of the Night. I got a thrill because there's that first hint. there's that first
foreshadowing. It was very hard to write them to not spoil anything. And I had to come up with a way to end it and to tie it together without spoiling anything. And the end of Night Moves tells you a lot about what happens at the end of Because the Night. But you don't have any answers yet. You know, something big has happened. You're not exactly sure what. And at this point, Melanie knows more about what's happened to Callie than Callie knows what's happened to Callie. And that's one of the reasons I really like writing in first person, because you discover things right along with the main character.
Right.
There's been a lot of things that are happening because Night Moves actually ends probably maybe about halfway through where Because the Night is. But a lot of things happen that at that point that Callie has no idea about, but she's reacting to the information that she has. And Because the Night actually ends mid-conversation. So when you pick up the sequel to that, it's going to be the rest of that conversation, what has happened. And basically, so you know what happens at the end of Night Moves, and you know what has been happening behind the scenes that Callie never saw.
It was awesome.
And,
I mean, it's so awesome, the way that you use first person. I was very close to kind of just squealing, because it's like a treat. I love sequels. I am a sequel whore. If I know I'm going to be able to continue to read author's work that I admire so much, that I love the voice, I love the premise, I love the characters, if I know I'm going to have the opportunity to get a hold of more of that action with the same characters I fell in love with in the first place, then I'm in love. I'm in heaven. So I don't need spoilers. I'm just thrilled half to death that you're planning. I'm kind of planning to go further with this, and especially with Talis. You've intrigued me on so many levels. But we need to go to a quick break. We will be back in just a few minutes. You are listening to Lydia's Literary Lowdown on WGGM.
Hello, everyone. B. Delosier here with a rundown of GGM Radio's brand new schedule. Boy, have we got some wonderful new programs with great new hosts. A little something for everyone. On Mondays at 11 a.m. Central, it's Messages of Light with Amanda Dowell for an hour of psychic chat and inspirational guests. Mondays at 7 p.m. Central, it's time for Primarily Paranormal with psychic Tina Marie. Share an hour with Tina and Bob Weber of Gulf Coast Paranormal. On the second and fourth Tuesday of every month at 8 p.m. Central, it's the Back to Brilliance Hour with Lynn Hoft and Vivian Hildebrand, an hour devoted to your spiritual growth. Wednesdays start at 11 a.m. Central with Maggie Holbeck and Crystal Clear Coaching, featuring motivational inspiration to get your life back on track. At 1 p.m. Central, join Claudia Cleary on Wednesdays with Namaste Nutrition for an hour of soothing chat all about good health, positivity, and spiritual balance. Thursdays, start your day at 9 a.m. Central with Nancy Murdoch and Mastering the Art of Joyfulness. Let Nancy and her special guests lift you out of that rut and get you back in your groove. At 8 p.m. Central, join Dr. Gregory Scott for the Light Giver Universal Healer Hour. Gregory offers spiritual education to further you along your path to enlightenment and empowerment. Fridays at 12 noon Central, it's Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Join Brenda for an hour of inspiration and motivation, featuring a lineup of today's most popular authors and guests. Friday night at 7 p.m. Central, enjoy an hour of psychic chat with spot-on reader Tasha Harris and the Angels Network. Saturdays begin at noon Central with B. Delosier, yours truly, and the Metaphysical Edge for psychic chat and interesting guests ranging from UFO research, paranormal experiencers, and all things metaphysical. At 2 p.m. Central on Saturday, it's Audrey Quinn and My Beauty Angel, an hour created just for you with tips and tricks on how to be the best you can be with what God has given you. Sunday is a day of service here on Greater Good Ministries Radio, each week featuring a different interfaith minister, bringing joy, upliftment, and unfoldment for body, mind, and spirit. The first Sunday of the month is Conversations Beyond the Edge with Dr. Gregory Scott. The second Sunday of the month is the Empowerment Hour with Reverend Barbara B. DeLosier. Third Sunday of the month is the Light Givers International Sunday Service and Worldwide Source a Nation Celebration. The fourth Sunday of the month is In His Presence with Evangelist Patricia Benneman. Hope you will join us live for all of our Greater Good Ministries radio programs, but if you can't be with us in person, you can hear any of our programs on demand in archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/ggmradio. And remember, all of our programs now stream live from our home site, www.ggmradio.com. Wishing everyone warmest blessings, always in love, light, and sound. Music provided by Arvel Bird, musician extraordinaire. Visit him at arvelbird.com and get a hold of all of Arvel's wonderful music.
Welcome back to Lydia's Literary Lowdown. I wanted to switch topics just a little bit because I know we have a lot of aspiring authors who listen to the show. And, of course, I'm always kind of interested to see how Kristen in particular, it does not surprise me at all that she got an agent. Not at all. If you read Because the Night or even the opening chapter of Night Moves, you're going to know why she got an agent. Her voice is palpable. It's powerful. It's compelling. And at times it's very gritty. So I'm not surprised she got an agent, Kristen. Not at all. But if you could take us through how the querying and submission process went for you, I would love to hear that.
Okay, nobody likes this story. Pam was my sixth query, and I had to gear up to say her name correctly, and everybody's already going to know who it is if they're familiar with Twitter and agents. It's Pam Von Hillcoma Vliet. That's how you say her name, kids. Von Hillcoma Vliet. And she's part of the Forward Literary Agency in San Francisco, and I had sent out a couple, and Julie and I did it together. We had no idea. We made every mistake in the book. We started it off with the rhetorical questions. We did everything wrong. We talked about agents, you know, choices of sweaters. I mean, they were bad. So we were going to this conference called the Backspace Conference, and I apologize for making you chiming in on this. That's my cockatiel. But we were going to the Backspace Conference, and that's all about querying and pitching, and we were on hiatus for that time until we knew what we were doing. We wanted to get the feedback from it. But I was on Twitter, big surprise, and Pam says she was looking for paranormal romance. Well, I had a paranormal romance. So I spent the afternoon crafting a query letter and sent her my first 10 pages and sent it off around 4 o'clock that afternoon. And at midnight, which, of course, is probably 9 o'clock her time, it was 9 o'clock her time because she's in California, I got an email saying she'd like to see the full. And this was amazing because nobody had wanted to see anything. After doing all the dances and making sure everything was absolutely perfect, they sent it off. And again, I didn't wait that long because I wanted to strike the iron while it was hot, while she was still interested. And maybe about 3 weeks later, she called me and offered me representation. And it's, I guess it's, actually kind of customary for people to put them on for about a week or so. And, you know, but I didn't have anything else out there. I had been told to take a hike by everybody else. So I accepted right away. So that's basically how I got Pam, Twitter.
Yeah, and I really don't think, that's something, I think that gives hope. It really stirs heart, kind of hope in the heart of others. Because you hear about
a lot of people, too, like, they kind of discount the social media aspect of having to promote themselves. Because let's face it, most writers are introverts, and that's not a problem that me and Julie have. But we have so many friendships because of Twitter, and we have such a good network because of Twitter. And I have an agent because of Twitter. And honestly, I think Julie may have found Books of the Dead from Twitter. She did. So, I mean, sure, it's stupid and mindless and, you know, it's a time waster, but I have an agent and she has a publisher because of Twitter. So if you use Twitter right, you're going to reap the rewards. So, you know, if you're thinking, oh, I can't do this, I can't put myself out there, this is a waste of time, no, it is not. And that's something that we're all going to have to think about going forward, is that things have changed and we all need to keep up with it.
Right, because, I mean, I've gotten – the other thing that I'm always trying to keep people aware of is the contests that are going out there. Well, one of the beautiful things nowadays is that there are loads of contests that go on Twitter. They just had Pitchmas in July. I got some requests off that. Jessa Rousseau and Fiki Snucker. I'm always afraid I'm going to say that so wrong on air. But they both have contests regularly. They're going to have another Twitter Pitchmas coming up in, I believe it's December. I try to keep an eye on the contest. You can get a agent via Twitter now. You can pitch your work thanks to these people. I mean, Brenda Drake is also very good. A lot of times she'll have contests. So these are sites I look at. Cupid's Literary Connection. What is it? Oh, I never remember it. Write, repeat, something. But there are loads and loads of contests, and a lot of them are coming to Twitter, if you're on Twitter. And not only that, but agents are human beings, people.
Exactly. That's
humans.
Exactly what I was going to say. You see, because at first you think, oh, my God, agent, like you think of the principal, you know, that has that ruler, like, slapping against their hand, like, just waiting to, nope, red pen, forget it, reject. And these people put their pants on one leg at a time, just like we do. And they're very human, and you can really develop relationships with a lot of different people that you wouldn't have the opportunity to. You know, Julie and I are friendly with Eric Rubin Esquire, Rubin Agency. He's amazing, and he's just always so accessible. And, of course, he's probably going to kill me for saying this, but he's wonderful, but he knows to keep it at the right place. Pam is very accessible, and you see the their personalities, too, and they see our personalities, and that's not something that we'd be able to see. We're 3,000 miles apart. You know, I bought flamingos for my porch, and she thought it was hysterical. She would never know that otherwise. You know, there's a lot of other people. Swoon Romance is extremely accessible and friendly. And, you know, you don't always want to go from it from the, oh, my God, you have something I want, perspective.
They're people.
Even, like,
they're
with
funny.
These people. You know,
yeah,
and they're
out.
People.
A good example is Eric Rubin Agency. Your banter with him is hilarious, but he was talking about his workout. Like, he had a personal trainer flogging the poor guy. I mean, I was like, my eyes hurt from what that man was going through, okay? And I said that. And, you know, he interacts with people. He does so many things. And I hope he's not listening
Eric
to this.
Eric is not,
you know, unmitigated praise. Yeah. The thing is that it's not just that. He goes a step further, and a lot of agents on Twitter will do this. He goes a step further in that Friday night, sometimes he'll do 10 queries. He looks at 10 queries from his inbox.
I don't know if these are random. I don't know if he picks out little lotto numbers, but he goes through them. He tells what works and what doesn't work. Every once in a while, using
right.
a hashtag ask agent, you have the opportunity to approach a literary agent who also happens to be an attorney and a hilarious person, okay? And you get to interact with him as well as Pam and Jessica Sinheimer. I can think of loads and loads of agents. Jordy Albert, there are loads. Marissa Cleveland, there's loads of agents who will interact with you. And honestly, it removes a lot of the fear once you realize that they're actually human beings, okay, with senses of humor intact. Then you can learn a lot from what they put out there. But I think you can learn a lot. If you want to laugh, you follow Kristen Strassel and
aww.
Julie Hutchings, Julie, in that
well,
order. I mean,
other,
you follow them. You guys are freaking hilarious.
Well, thank you. The other thing, too, is you, me and Julie, like, Julie doesn't have anything out yet. I don't have anything out yet. So don't discount the people who don't have anything out yet. There's a lot of up-and-coming talent that you're going to find that not only are they wonderful people, but you're going to grow with them, and you're going to be like, I knew this person when, and they're going to make you better writers because these are going to become your critique partners. These are going to become your beta people. These are going to become the people that you're bouncing ideas off of, and they're going to help you. And Julie has a street team that's, you know, got the flag up and, you know, marching down the hill, you know, in battle for her. And that's wonderful. And that's what you need. Like, you need a team of people who are just as passionate as you are. And again, this isn't, you know, what you can do for me. I don't care if none of these people, you know, these people are my friends and I don't want anything from them. And that's kind of funny because, again, we've never met in real life. I actually met China Blue Scott this week because I was in England, but we would have never met in real life. But she's one of my beta readers. I talked to her with my babies, you know. So these are
you
things
that...
You
need to use Twitter. That's it. You need to use Twitter because you will... I mean, you pointed out the best part. You're not introverted anymore. You can talk to people about what you're going through. I mean, let's just talk about the truth. The truth is that being on submission, I'm on submission with agents right now, and you're on submission with editors right now, and it can be a very, I mean, writing is isolating, but not as isolating with Twitter. Being on submission is isolating, but it's not as isolating when you can joke around and tell people, oh, my God, get the straitjacket. I don't think I'm going to make it much longer.
Oh, no. And the other thing, too, is thinking of just the theories that we sent out before we were really on Twitter and we knew anybody. We deserved all the laughs that I'm sure we got. And that would never happen now because of all of the people that we met there. Just making the contacts and finding out the information and reading, like Penn and News Press, who I'm actually working with as well, with Kristen and Jolene, they put amazing links up about what to do about your writing process, what to do about queries, what to do about publishing, what to do about everything. Just those links and knowing where to find them and actually seeing the other blogs has taught me so much.
It is amazing. And thank God it's there.
Right.
I mean,
could you imagine
20
years ago
network.
We would have been all by ourselves going through a book, writing letters, mailing out 300-page manuscripts to people. And waiting even longer to get information because there was no instant feedback. So I really admire all the people, you know, that came before us who, you know, fought the good fight. And we have it easy. And that was something that I learned in makeup artistry, that the internet has made things very easy. And it's still hard, but it's not as hard as it used to be. And that's something we really need to appreciate. You know, it cuts out all of the footwork. And you have that instant access that you can give the information to people immediately and get a response 8 hours later or 2 hours later, or you can read my book well before it's even out.
I love that because lest you think I've forgotten, I have not forgotten. You said something about a novella. A prequel novella, and I'm going to expect that to be hitting my inbox to tide me over.
I think you'll enjoy it. it's funny. I knew the backstory very well, of course. But my good friend Liz, who's actually a makeup artist, and she was one of my first readers. I want the backstory. I want to know what drew Callie to Tristan. I'm not buying this so much. Why did she come out? And this was in an earlier draft, so it had been solidified a bit. So I wrote a novella for my friend Liz, basically. And it's the summer that Callie and Tristan spent together in Martha's Vineyard. He was visiting his aunt, who rented a little cottage to Callie's family, because Callie's family is not the people who think Martha's Vineyard, you must have tons of money. The people who live there and work there year-round, they're blue-collar. They're running shops. Callie's family has a restaurant. Her father's a handyman. They're very blue-collar, hardworking people. And so you get to see kind of that interaction, because that's not Tristan's world at all, and how they interact and how they come together and how what leads to Because the Night. And that is coming out soon. I don't have a release date. Fast Forward Publishing, which is actually an arm of Forward Literary, publishes novellas and short stories for their clients, basically to kind of get the ball rolling and help out with publicity. So that will be coming out. Everybody will be able to read that. I'm excited about that.
So am I. As a matter of fact, you know what? I would rather put money in your pocket. Like, on the last show with Patrick Verdine, I was saying, you know, I'm not a fan, and maybe this is just awful of me. I would rather buy, I've read your work. I've read Julie's work. It's magnificent. I am a rereader. I love to reread. Every book I own, I have reread, and I will continue to do that. I would love to put money in your pocket. I'm not on board with a zero, it's free kind of
revolution going on. Yeah, somebody
here
who pays their rent off is doing art. No, that is something I actually believe very strongly about, and I've ranted about on the blog, is that artists do not pay rent with, oh, my God, I love your book, and I just stole it off of Pirate Bay.
No, I'm buying
artists
it. Thank
need
you
your
very
money.
Much. I don't even know any pirate sites, because that's disrespecting the artist. I think all authors should charge something for their book. When I go to Kindle and I see all the free work, I think, why? Oh, my God, why? I would be happy to pay for your work. It offends me not to be able to pay my way. So I'm hoping that you and Julie both will give me the opportunity to buy signed copies, because that would be awesome. That's how talented you are.
Well, thank you. And that's what something is. Julie and I are not people who let things happen. We both worked for a retail giant, and we got a lot of sales pitches that were hammered into our heads. And one of the ones that stuck with me was, change doesn't happen to you, you happen to change. And that's something that has always stuck with me, and I've lived my life by that. And it was something on a stupid voicemail one morning when, you know, I had 1,000 other things to do, but boy, did that get my attention. And Julie and I are really thinking in tandem about marketing and things we can do that are different. We don't want to give you the same thing that you can get from everybody else, because you can get that from everybody else. We want you to come to us for Running Home, for Because the Night, for anything that we have out, because it's different. And we want to do different things. And we want to thank you for the fact that you care enough that you want our work. And we want to recognize that you deserve more than that, that you don't deserve
a
half-assed effort.
Well, I want your work. That's all I want, because I'm a selfish, greedy little pig, and I can't have enough of it. And Running Home, that's coming out soon as well. I've already talked to Julie.
Yes, very soon.
That is also, it's absolutely amazing. And what really intrigues me is that Julie's is vampire too, but it's not. None of these three books. Okay, Because of the Night, Night Moves, or Running Home. Yeah, I say vampire, and I swear I will get a sledgehammer and smack you right in between the eyes if you think it's normal or the stuff you see on bookshelves all the time. This is different. Every single one of them, it's the humans who are the stars. these are, I mean, Melanie and Callie are women I totally identify with. I identify with Callie because God knows I've been naive enough times. Every woman is naive at some point in their life. I identify with Melanie because she's more jaded. She's more cynical. She's seen a lot more. So, I mean, you just, in the way that you set this up, there is nothing that is not believable. I mean, there are scenes, I think, after I finished the book, I went, my God, I can't believe she did that. I cannot believe she did that. I read right through that. I totally bought it. I still buy it. I don't know how she did that. And she played like the best trick on me ever. And night moves, because you, a relationship forms. And that's Ryder and Melanie, but the relationship formed so organically, so seamlessly, so smoothly. I was into that relationship before it was even concrete. I mean, how on earth did it just unravel? And this is a pants. You did this by the seat of your pants. I really do kind of want to hurt you right now. It's jealousy. That's all it is. What you accomplished with both these books is magnificent.
I had an idea of what I wanted to do with that. And I didn't at the time when I first started writing it. I didn't know that it was going to, I didn't even know it was going to be a vampire novel, to be honest. I didn't kind of go into this with the thought, okay, this is going to be, Night Song, the collection became a thing as I started writing it. And it seemed so obvious that that's what it needed to be. It needed to be a companion to Because the Night. And that I could use the same, and not to be lazy at all, because it was actually, it had much more challenges to use the same mythology, but it made so much sense. And I was, you know, inspired by something else I saw on the internet, and I'm like, that's not how I'd write the story. And that's how it all started, you know, really just, I'd do that differently. And I tried it, and that was the first chapter. That is available on deadlyeverafter.com. And, you know, it just went from there, you know, like, what would she do next? What would happen next? And I kind of knew who all of the characters actually in Night Moves are real people. I kind of mashed them a little bit, but every single one of those things, even down to the fetish modeling and the sneezing fetish, which is Erin.
You know,
Melanie's
everyone
friend.
Wants to read that book thanks to that right now. I mean,
exactly. Drake is a real person. Ryder's a real person. Jamie's a real person. All of them are real people. And it's I kind of laugh to, you know, my friends, I'm going to get sued for this book, because if anybody figures out what I'm writing about, obviously all the names are changed to protect the not so innocent.
I love
they're real
because
people.
See, what you didn't know the whole time was, obviously, my name is Lydia. There's a Lydia in there. She's not a main character. She's referred to like frickin' once, right? And then I had no idea that Tristan, and I'm probably not going to say her name right, Taryn, I had no idea they were twins. I'm a fraternal twin. So
oh, nice.
You had
well,
so many
meet
little
Taryn
details
a lot more
in
the prequel because she's there too.
I was geeking out. I was thrilled. It's those little touches. You have something, I swear to God, you have something for everyone to identify with in these books. Everyone.
I try to keep it real, even though it's a fantasy and there's vampires and things that would not happen in normal everyday life. But I really went out of my way to keep reactions real and things as real as possible because, you know, sometimes you just read books and it's like, that would never happen. That nobody would respond that way. Or like I said, that piece that I read on the internet, that's just not what I would do in that situation. You know, and that's why I really just want to keep it real, to be honest.
That's the basis of every good book I've ever read. That's the basis of every good horror novel, every good urban fantasy, hard sci-fi, any book that I've ever read, especially if it has to do with kind of otherworldly situations or something that doesn't take place in reality. All of them have been rooted very firmly in the world around us in a way that we can absolutely identify with. And you have nailed it. That's it.
Why, thank you. And even the vampires, because they are new vampires. They, you know, 2 or 3 years, they've been human a lot longer than they've been vampires. So they're very human, too.
Right.
And they have human problems and human regrets. And they're so close to their human lives. you know, and that's what drives them.
So close that they're totally identifiable. They may call themselves monsters, but they're not. And you know what? I have enjoyed talking to you so much, but we're going to run out of time if we keep nattering on. Definitely, I want you back on this show. Agree now.
Anytime.
Okay,
anytime.
We have it on
Thank
air.
You for having
we
me. I had a great
it.
Time.
We can use it in the archives. The absolutely magnificent Kristen Straza will be back on this show, and no doubt as a roaring success. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Okay, everyone, literally my voice is probably going to cut out any time now, but I so appreciate you listening. Check out DeadlyEverAfter.com. Follow Kristen Straza. Follow Hutchings Julie and enjoy. There's so much good stuff up on their blog. Next week, I'm actually not going to be on, so we will be back with Lydia's Literary Lowdown on August the 17th. Have a good week, everyone. Bye-bye.